Welcome to the Australian Finance Podcast, a podcast for people who want to learn more about their personal finances and get the most from their money. This series is hosted by Kate Campbell from How To Money and Owen Raskovich from Rask Finance.
The Australian Finance Podcast is provided for educational purposes only. The information is general in nature and does not take into account your needs, goals, or objectives. What that means is the information does not apply to you specifically. So consider getting the advice of a licensed and trusted professional before acting on the information. Ted, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much, Owen. Thanks, Kate.
It's our privilege to have you here. You're a former AFL superstar. You got your own podcast. You're working a six-pack. You've done it all, mate.
No, I wouldn't say that at all. I've very much proud and enjoy my time that I played football, but I always knew what I wanted to move into after football, and that's investing. So thoroughly enjoy what I do, and I started up the podcast a few years ago as a bit of a trial, and pleasingly it seems to have got a few listeners. So that's very much what I'm up to now.
Great. Yeah, I know Kate is a fan of Six Park.
Yes, correct? Yeah, I've been using Six Park myself for a couple of years now, so I've been reading Ted's blogs and podcasts, watching, reading, listening to the podcast since. So that's been really good, and I've enjoyed my journey with Six Park.
Oh, it's good to hear. We've just had our third birthday, and we're a robo advisor, which I've probably already lost many people that may go, what's a robo advisor? And all it means is we provide investment management online, and it's a bit different because we don't provide it face to face, and so we now have clients all over Australia, like yourself, Kate, and we've got a lot of people that sign up to our newsletter, and I'm thoroughly enjoying it to be able to help people improve the quality of life for the next 5, 10, 20, 30 years. It's a thoroughly rewarding career.
Mm. I think it's great nowadays you can get a whole portfolio set up without actually having to see anyone face to face. I know especially I wouldn't have time, or I don't really want to see someone face-to-face, so it's great to have that option nowadays.
Mm. Before we get stuck in, I'm going to jump in. Because I would like to, and I think our listeners would benefit from this, is just learning more about you. You said it's finance investing has been a passion for you for a long time. How about you just give us the quicker version of your history, particularly growing up? Was money a part of your life? Was finance, anyone mentor you, anything like that?
Yeah, so I grew up in Melbourne and always had a deep passion for AFL, and was fortunate enough to get drafted at the age of 17, and very lucky in that when you get drafted, you get paid, and
suddenly you've got lots of money at 17.
I'm living with mum and dad, and 17, 18, and coming into a bit of money, and having to make decisions about what I'm going to do with it now that I'm a young adult. Mm. And my dad gave me a book at the time, as Peter Lynch's book, One Up on Wall Street, and I didn't do any accounting, economic subjects at school. And I really enjoyed it. And I decided that I was going to start investing in the market off the back of what I was reading by Peter Lynch. And I made some pretty expensive lessons in that I was probably thought I was a bit better than I was, and probably a bit naive, and had too much confidence for, and probably not an appreciation of what actual real research is. But what it did do is planted a seed in my mind about another passion that I had, and that is investing. So started to read as much as I could, started a commerce degree, and very proud to say that I had a football career that went for 16 years, but I've studied for 15 of those, and so knocked over the commerce degree and the master's, and I also worked part-time, so for 6 years, albeit just one day a week, in the investing space for 2 years on the sell side under stockbrokers, just learning a bit about that. And that's over the sell side. And I quite enjoyed that, but also wanted to dig a bit deeper over the buy side. So I had 4 years over there working under a fund manager. And when my football wrapped up, my football career finished up in 2016, I knew that the next career, the new challenge that I wanted to take up, and I had a friend in Singapore that knew about someone that was starting up a fund in Australia called Six Park, and I knew very little about robo-advice. And Pat, who's the CEO of Six Park, and I sat down for a coffee, and he started talking about what's going on with robo-advice around the world. And it really resonated with me because I have seen so many people in my life fall victim to poor advice, whether it's lack of transparency, too high fees, so many conflicts, all these things that are probably coming out about the Royal Commission over the last 6 months. And I'd seen teammates in the change rooms of the football club fall victim to this too. And so I wanted to get involved. And so moved down from Sydney to Melbourne to join Six Park. And that's been there for over 2 years now and thoroughly enjoying it.
Cool. Did you grow up in Melbourne?
Yeah, I grew up in Melbourne. I went to school around the corner from here too.
Nice and close.
Yeah.
To talk into the terms of the topic of behavioural economics, which I know you went overseas to study, was it at Harvard?
Yeah, I did a course at Harvard Business School last year.
Yeah, I saw you had done that and I didn't even know they offered that sort of stuff, so that's really cool. How did you come across the topic of behavioural economics and what interests you about it?
Yeah, so I studied economics in the commerce degree and my master's of applied finance, and listeners may be aware, but the study of economics assumes that we're all rational and that we always make decisions that are in our best interest. But that's not actually the case.
No, I don't think that's the case.
No. So we're not rational, and not only that, we make predictable mistakes time and time again. And I'm not saying that other people do this and I'm perfect. I put myself in this category too. So the study of behavioural economics is aware that we're not always rational, and some of the decisions we make are influenced by biases. And so I wanted to do that because I'd started at Six Park and I'd be speaking with clients and partners and different people within the industry about logical reasons, which are really important about asset allocation, keeping your fees low, diversifying, and all these fantastic important things. But people, and once again, I put myself in this category, would be so influenced by something they saw in a newspaper a week ago or something they heard on the radio all these irrational things, we can be our own worst enemy. It doesn't matter how much we dig deep into the logical aspects of investing or money management. We need to be aware of these biases that we have because, as I just said before, we can be our own worst enemy.
And they can filter into everything we do, especially in investing. And I guess if you don't realize them, it can impact your performance and your returns long term.
Yeah, there's a line I love, and that is when emotions are high, logic is low. And I think, at the time of recording it, what is it, mid-June, markets have had a pretty good, everyone's pretty happy. But I think the behavioural mistakes, start to kick in when people get a bit nervous, they can't sleep at night, all these other, like, there's a story I've told this a few times recently, and that if a neighbour of yours wins the lottery, the chances that you are going to go bankrupt actually significantly increase.
Wow.
And that's because we are influenced by the money management of people around us. Yeah. So if someone all of a sudden starts increasing their spending and buying all these other things, that's actually going to influence our spending behavior too. And so keeping up with the Joneses, we start taking on a bit more financial risk to try and keep up with them. So this doesn't make sense. It's the stupidest thing ever, but this has been proven.
Yeah.
So I guess that's just an example of, when emotions are high, logic is low.
Yeah. I guess it's like watching everyone at work go on holidays and then you're perfectly fine before because you're going to go on one next year, but then suddenly you feel like you're the one, odd one out and you're missing out on all this opportunity.
There's this belief in investing in markets that there's effectively three types of investing edges that you can have. And the first one would be an analytical advantage. So you think that people are really intelligent, therefore they would be better investors, which isn't always the case. as we know. The second one might be an informational advantage, and that might be having access to information first or just better information more broadly. But the third one, which I believe overrules everything else, is this behavioral edge. And you and what the, you and the team do at Six Park is very interesting in this respect. And I think this is where you personally and as an organization can add a lot of value beyond just the simple analytics, because you've got computers that can do the analytics. You've got the access to the same information everyone else has. So what's your advantage? And I think if you can incorporate the behavioral aspect, how you can teach your clients, I think that's a huge advantage for you.
Yeah, you're right. And so our investment philosophy is quite passive, and that's just probably a bit of a fancy adjective to describe someone that invests in ETFs and index funds. But where we do think it is important is to get diversification right over multiple asset classes and in different countries around the world. And that is our investment philosophy. And if you can have some form of dollar cost averaging where you're consistently adding to your portfolio and the ability to stay calm in times of high volatility or even, you know, corrections or, God forbid, the odd crash, you know, it's a fantastic mindset to have when it comes to your investing. And I think you're so right about the behavior, because I can remember reading about often some of the portfolios where investors have forgotten that they own them are the best performing.
Yeah, yeah. So the dead investors are the best.
Mm. Yeah, I've even heard of, say, once again, bringing it back to Six Park, but having these portfolios for people where you can actually, when they go to make a trade or sell or something like that, you can actually prompt them and say, hey, if you do this, this is the tax outcome. This is likely what you're feeling. And it's simply because the computer can run an algorithm over your decision-making effectively and see what thousands of other people have done before you and then analyze what the expected outcome is. And it's quite a unique way to tilt on behavioral investing.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And that's we don't actually have that feature to give people the nudge about the
That'd be pretty clever.
Yeah, so
like if you make this withdrawal now, you're going to be $500,000 worse off in the long term.
Yeah, and it's all that if you're selling at a gain, it'll probably be creating a tax event, and that you and if you can make people aware of that, they might think, well, there's actually benefit in just, you know, leaving that bit. And I guess through technology, a behavioral economist call it choice architecture, how you can actually implement strategies to ensure that people's behavior, we're not, you know, we're nudging them for the right reason, not for the wrong reason, to try and do the right thing. And that is a nudge to maybe set up an automated payment plan, or a nudge to remind people that their actions here might create an unnecessary tax event. And I guess that's one of the benefits of technology, because before things like APIs and all the fantastic technology that we've got right now, it was people on a phone, by themselves and a newspaper trying to work it out.
Yeah, having to go for a stockbroker and...
Yeah, and pay a lot per trade too.
Yeah, definitely. I think my nan still does it that way, has to call someone up and get them to make the trade for her. So our personal behavior has a big impact on our financial incomes. I'd like to hear your take on what are some of the biggest mistakes we make.
Yeah, well, I think I study more in finance from the investing side as opposed to all the other aspects. And with investing, the conversations that I think I have, and probably similar to you, is so much about the recency bias. Mm. People really get wrapped up in what has been performing well recently. Yeah. And it's probably not so much a story right now, although it has kind of popped its head back up, is Bitcoin. And we see how
yep.
how attracted and people were, how allured they were to these double-digit performance returns, you know, month after month.
And you're getting family that were never interested in finance before and had never invested suddenly asking you about it. I think that was the case for most people in the industry.
Yeah, so it's be it Bitcoin, be it US tech stocks, be it lithium miners over here in
marijuana stocks.
Yeah, or marijuana, yeah. And so there'll always be the next one of those. And it's just a matter of being aware that no one can predict all these things you know, what the genius does first, the fool does last. So many people will just be trying to chase all these recently well-performing stocks and probably suffer the falls on the downside. Another mistake is the hindsight bias, which I think people falsely put too much importance on their own memory, and people assume that their memory events are engraved in their mind and they can recall them vividly. But from what the research suggests is that our memory is more like an etch-a-sketch where we kind of can manipulate them to
rewrite it.
Yeah, yeah.
To make the story a bit better.
Yeah, so when people, and this is some of the conversations I've had more recently, think about how they may behave in the next correction or crash, well, they'll go, well, you know, I learned my mistake in 2008, 2009, the financial crisis there, and I'll know that it's a buying opportunity. But it's so easy to make form that opinion in hindsight, you know. But in the heat of the moment, we become a bit more irrational. I guess confirmation bias is not something that's only limited to investing, but that is a mistake people get where they form an opinion about something, and that might be that they're a great stock picker this is an investment that needs to be made, whatever it is. And confirmation bias, it's very hard to sidestep. All they'll do is they'll look for all the evidence to support that that is a good decision and really discount anything that differs from that. So, and I think we saw it a bit in politics and all these other parts of life, and I'm probably guilty of it sometimes with my discussions at home with my wife. the last thing which I want to touch on is a common mistake that people can make, and it's described as the ostrich effect, and it's when kind of a bit the head in the sand approach, when many people have that approach to their superannuation where it's all too hard, things haven't worked out, I'm just going to forget about it. And what's fantastic about your podcast and this engagement of that I'm sure listeners have is the earlier you can be engaged, educate yourself. You don't have to get everything always right, but if you can really get some big things right and start as early as you can to harness the power of compound returns, you give yourself such an advantage in later in life, because this lack of engagement that some people have, it may not seem like a mistake, but before you know it, a decade can go by. Yeah. And if you go, but I know that we had the financial crisis in 2008-09, yeah, that's 10 years ago. And a decision that could have been made 10 years ago to, I don't know, maybe just ensure that they're invested in the right super fund, or maybe just to get a second opinion on some of the fees that they're paying, that can have huge returns over compounding out over 10 years.
So that's an interesting, because it's kind of the behavior gap, and we'll put a picture in the show notes of what it is, but it's effectively buy high, sell low, and then repeat until broke. And it's one of those things like, it's not until we have 2020 hindsight that we can realize that was a mistake.
Yep.
So we've kind of moved into this now, but what are some of the, I guess we've, what are some of the ways that people can combat these things, do you think?
Yeah, so it's a very good question, because we are wired the way we're wired to make decisions. And all investing fundamentally is the decisions that we make with our own money.
Yeah.
So we need to be aware of the biases and how we make decisions, but also aware that that'll only get us so far. So I think if I could provide some tips, I think we need to protect ourselves from ourselves by, where possible, and this is far easier said than done, but by decreasing the amount of our own touch points we have with money, and
especially with our phone and our apps.
Because We will be influenced very quickly. Some listeners may be aware, but we make decisions two ways. There's the system one way of thinking, which is quite automated. It's very quick. It's very responsive. It's been fantastic to ensure that we survive. And that's how most decisions are made. Mm-hmm. System two is a bit more slow, a bit more reflective. It takes more time and more energy. And we don't always use system two, even though that mm-hmm. we think we're very rational and we always consider all items. So I think being aware of that system one and that it's this instinctive decision and what can affect that, we need to, I guess, really reduce that opportunity for our gut instincts and things like that to kick in and decide all of a sudden we need a jet ski, you know, and we need to buy some more skis or something like that. So by automating these things, be it setting up payment plans to ensure that your part of your salary gets paid into something that you can't touch on a Saturday night, or ensuring that you're putting aside a bit of money into an investment portfolio, be it Six Park or someone else, this is fantastic. Behavioral economists call it choice architecture. And I think that can be great. I think, you know, so much of what I talk about is investing. I think you really need to make a decision as to your own investment philosophy. Mm. Are you going to be passive, look at the evidence and set up some rules to be your investment philosophy? Or if you do think that you can be a good stock picker, are you prepared to do the due diligence? Are you prepared to acknowledge what is inside and outside of your circle of competence, do pre-mortems, post-mortems, you know, and actually not try and be everything? Because I think I see that so commonly with some investors that are pretty, they're smart people. And, you know, they'll invest in Australian banks, they'll invest in miners overseas, they'll invest in tech stocks in the US, they'll invest in up-and-coming companies in China and India, and it is very hard.
You end up to be very the top complicated of the, portfolio.
Complicated portfolio where on the other side of the trade, you've got professionals. So I guess that's the last point that I'd like to make. How can you protect yourself from yourself? And that is what is inside your circle of competence and what is outside, because some people may think that they've got a very large circle of competence. I think Howard Marks talks about it's not how big your circle is, but actually knowing what is inside and what is outside. And for most people that are busy, that may have a family, they work full time, they catch up with friends and family on the weekend, it is very hard to think that you know something that most professionals don't know on the other side of the trade, when it's be it about Woolworths and Wesfarmers or a bank or, you know. So I probably rambled on a bit there, but to go back, I think how we can automate so much of these small decisions we can make with our money can really grow to be big things.
Reducing the options you have when it comes to decision making. I definitely found that automating parts of my finances has actually really helped. And suddenly you look after 2 years and your investment has grown a lot more than you thought it did, because it's just those small regular drips in, and you don't feel the pain of a small amount going every month. But if I had to come up with that amount now, that would be a bit more challenging.
And there's some fantastic apps out there that are probably free, to be honest, too, where you can kind of give you a bit of a guidance. And and like you said, Kate, you get a bit of success and you get that momentum of success and you go, well, I'm actually achieving things here. And you're right to feel quite proud of yourself too.
Yeah. I think we spoke in our podcast last week about using those micro-investing apps to sort of learn the basics and learn portfolio construction and diversification, so you can actually use their information for your own purposes and actually get as much value as you can out of it. I do think one challenge though with all the apps is it's so easy to withdraw or sell based on something you've seen in the media or a feeling you're having.
Yeah, I totally agree. And there's great sides to technology, but at the same time, our money is just one or two clicks away. So sometimes it can be good just to delete delete the apps if you do feel like that you're being influenced. And that I delete my social media apps every now and then too if I feel like I'm just starting to spend a bit too much time on them.
Yeah, having your social media, having your news apps and having your investing apps all in one place is sometimes a recipe for disaster.
I think I really like the idea of automating things. And I think some of the, particularly the online banks, do a really good job of that, making it very simple to set up, say, BPAY transactions or direct deposits,
regular
whatever.
Payments.
Yeah. The Barefoot Investor talks about, you know, having buckets of money. And if we were thinking about pure economics, $1 here doesn't, we all think about every single dollar is exactly the same. But I think mental accounting is a fantastic way to think about your money. And if you can automate payments into each of those buckets, it can help, really help.
Yeah, I've heard definitely people that have the one account for going out and one account for bills, and they said that's really helped them with their budget. So instead of having to do up a budget, they've kind of just got the bank accounts and automated payments.
And the problem is you just don't want to have too much to make it too easy for yourself as well as overcomplicating it.
Yeah.
A few others that I quite like, and these are very simple things that people can do, is just have a checklist. So do it when you're in a calm state, something that you can write down or you can just check the boxes off. For example, I have one and I just take it to my wife anytime I'm going to make an investment. And she's my BS filter, of course.
Yep.
So she just takes it and goes, yeah, but you didn't really think about this, so no. Another one, really good one to do, is just to give yourself time. So to set a rule, instead of, say, if it's investment or whatever you're going to purchase, give yourself, say, 3 days. So say if it's a material purchase, let's say it's over $500. Say, my rule is that I can't buy anything within 3 days of making the decision. And you sleep on it a few nights and you might find that you actually don't value those things that you did in the moment because you're trying to avoid that system one thinking that you were referring to. And probably the final thing I'd say is if you are investing is just have, some rules around the intraday movements of your investments. So Jason Zweig, who was a columnist and a fantastic author, he had this book when he narrated, I think it was the Intelligent Investor, some anniversary edition. He had this rule where he wouldn't sell a share, and he's an index fund investor, but he wouldn't sell a share if it fell more than 5%. And it's just such a simple nudge that you don't want to be selling a loser. He would just hold on to it to the end of the day and see what happens the next day. As painful as it is, it's his rule, and he made that, I suppose, before the fact. And it's just a little behavioural nudge to try and get you away from that system one thinking. And in addition just to, you know, see no evil, do no evil in terms of just automating everything, it can also be good to have those checklists.
Jason Zweig, how good is he? A checklist is just a good name for rules-based investing.
Yep.
And rules is that whether it comes to rebalancing, you'll sell your winners and buy more losers to be able to get that. A little cheat that some person's done for their online trading account is they've got a 20-character long detailed password that they cannot remember.
And they don't save it in Google.
And then they hide it in their garage at home.
Oh, wow.
So if they want to log into their online trading account, it is a bit of effort to go through. And it just protects themselves from them. Yeah.
That's great. Anything else that you want to ask Ted, Kate?
Oh, I think that's sort of the major points I wanted to talk about. It's been great having you onto the podcast today.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's not every day we get to have someone of your stature come in and meet with us. And not only that, just someone that's interested in finance and wants to come in and talk. Melbourne-based, it's pretty hard to find these days.
Well, it's a passion of mine and to meet fellow podcasters and have a chat. I think I'm 36. I'm aware that there's still so much more that I can learn. Podcasting has been fantastic for my education as well. To be able to, you mentioned Jason Zweig, to listen to his thoughts on the market. But what's great is about what you guys are doing is that so much of the podcast world that's been in, you know, investing in finance, more often than not, is coming out of America. So, you know, we do have a bit of a niche here of people that are producing
content without 401k mentions.
And I think that it's relevant too because, you know, be it options like Six Park or banks or other providers like Rask. They're real options that people can subscribe to newsletters to get education. They can find out more as opposed to some of these entities offshore, which just aren't available for Australians.
Mm.
There's a lot more information nowadays for self-directed investors to do it all themselves rather than having to outsource everything to a third party and add an extra layer of fees.
Mm. So, well, as we wrap up, just tell our listeners how they can get in touch with Six Park and find you on social media, etc.
Yeah, appreciate that. So, if you'd like to find out more about Six Park, it's sixpark.com.au and it's completely free to take the Six Park risk assessment. And it's just takes 2 minutes and you'll get your free investment recommendation there. If you'd like to have a listen to my podcast, it's called The Richards Report. I only produce one a month, unlike you guys. Which, so
sensible.
Yeah, well done to you both for putting out one a week, because they do take up more time than listeners think. So I'll be coming out with mine next week.
You're on Twitter?
And or on Twitter, yeah. So thanks for the nudge there.
But, no one loves Twitter.
Yeah, at Ted Richards 25. Don't look up at Ted Richards. I think that's someone that, no, at...
Is the 25 symbolic?
Oh, that's my old playing number. But I used to have a at Richards Report Twitter handle, but that's actually someone that tweets the weather from the top of Falls Creek here. Oh,
wow. So I had nothing. Don't want to take that.
From my podcast, I had to take Richards _ report.
Right.
Wonderful. Well, we'll link to all of that in the show notes. Once again, Kate, Ted, thanks for coming.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.